moats are dead and brand is the only moat. You know, Peter Thiel says, like, the best way to compete is to not compete. And I think that brand is the best way you can do that, where if you occupy enough mental space for a category, no one is searching for an alternative. Like, basically, the strategy for startups right now is to be Coca-Cola. It's like, why do you drink Coca-Cola? Not because of any, like lock-in or anything. It's because it's Coca-Cola. I think that brand is the best mode out there this year. The Startup Ideas Podcast. Sipping time, baby.
It's Greg Eisenberg. Sipping time, baby. Let's get those green juices flowing. Danny Grant, I am so excited to have you here, and I woke up today. I was like really excited to have you here because I know you're an idea machine. And then you tweet out something that I was so excited. So you tweet out Before Jam, which is your venture-backed startup. I think you've raised $9 or $10 million. There were 141 startup ideas we didn't build. About to share them for the first time on Greg Eisenberg's podcast, and now I'm just salivating.
So my co-founder and I met when we were product managers at Cloudflare, and we loved working together so much so that after I left Cloudflare, we did like a hackathon weekend trip to Colorado. We got like a cabin in the woods and we like hacked on startup ideas, and we just knew we were going to start something together. We just didn't know what. And so what does any enterprising, you know, mid-20s person do when they know they're going to start something is they create a notion of ideas. And we filled it with all sorts of ideas we had over the course of like a couple of weeks. And there are now 141 ideas in this Notion. And we got super lucky because here's what happened. We had like a call scheduled to go through our Notion and pick what startup to start. And before we could even open this doc, we just started gossiping about our old team and talking about this crazy like PM engineer process. Like, That was happening right now in the team. It was like, it was early COVID. No one was set up for remote, and engineers were like asked to be like updating like spreadsheets and JIRAs. It was insanity. And we're like, wait, should we just solve a problem that we have faced ourselves instead of any of these ideas? And I've got to tell you, I am so happy we did, because the thing that I did not appreciate on day one of being a founder is that if this goes to plan, this is actually probably the next 10, 15 years of your life. And so to work on something that I love the user of, because I've been that person and that like I resonate with the problem, like I feel like we dodged a bullet, but now we've got a lot of ideas to share with the people listening to you.
Perfect. Win-win situation. And I actually didn't realize that you were at Cloudflare. At the end of this episode, I'll tell you the story of how I met the founders of Cloudflare when I was just a kid from a Facebook group. So I'll share that at the end.
Stop. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'll share that at the end. But all right, we're not going to get to all 141, of course. But
of course,
I don't want to waste a second. What's your first idea for us?
Okay, idea one: K-pop style factories for particular talent. When you're building a startup, there are certain unicorn hires you just have to make. But every single startup has to make the same unicorn hires. Like, here's an example. When a startup hires their first growth marketer, that's a specialized hire. It is a hard hire to find. Like, our first marketer, we spent 8 months searching, like really searching. But that's a set of skills and you can teach it. And so you could imagine a world in which there's a K-pop style factory where they are churning out the first growth marketer for startups, and people will pay a lot. And they'll pay to not have to spend 8 months searching and to have the person start the next day when honestly they needed someone yesterday and didn't start hiring soon enough.
So there's a lot of programs for technical talent that exist, training for technical talent, but there doesn't feel like there's that much in like the growth marketer, content marketer space. So are you saying like develop like, you know, the programs around taking someone who's not a growth marketer to become a growth marketer and then connecting those growth marketers with people who want to hire them? Is that the idea?
I'm here to tell you that I love boot camps. Like, I think coding boot camps have changed so many people's lives. Like, I think they are one of the best things that's happened in education in the last 10 years. But this flips it on its head. that's the code bootcamp route is take people, make them junior developers at a generalized big company. This is the opposite of that. It's take people, make them extremely senior, very fast, extremely specialized for a high paying, like extremely focused type of job. So growth marketer is one. Here's another type of job that you could do this sort of like K-pop factory for, which is a dev evangelist. When a startup needs their first dev evangelist, that person is like a superstar hire. I mean, like they have star power, they're building, they're great at speaking. Like that person is so hard to find. And the only people out there that you can see doing it are the ones who are already doing it. And you don't just need someone who can do it, you need someone who's going to be the first. And so like, instead of me as a founder, any founder out there, like hiring a recruiter, trolling through LinkedIn and Twitter and trying to interview like hundreds of people for this one super specialized role, why shouldn't there just be like the factory that turns out the best people at this? Low acceptance rate, but they like make them amazing.
Quick ad break. Let me tell you about a business I invested in. It's called boringmarketing.com. So a few years ago, I met this group of people that were some of the best SEO experts in the world. They were behind getting some of the biggest companies found on Google. And the secret sauce is they've got a set of technology and AI that could help you outrank your competition. So for my own businesses, I wanted that. I didn't want to have to rely on Mark Zuckerberg. I didn't want to depend on ads to drive customers to my businesses. I wanted to rank high in Google. That's why I like SEO, and that's why I use boringmarketing.com, and that's why I invested in it. They're so confident in their approach that they offer a 30-day sprint with 100% money-back guarantee. Who does that nowadays? So check it out. Highly recommend boringmarketing.com. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you're thinking about job titles that are overlooked. Like the way we connected originally, I don't know if you remember, but you were looking for a community manager.
Yeah. Yes.
You were looking like for a community manager, and that's like maybe less so now, but at the time it was like a new type of role, like managing Discords and things like that. So I think maybe the framework for people listening at least is like, what are roles that are you're just starting to hear for the first time? So one of those, for example, is design engineer.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. So I think what you do is when you start hearing a name for the first time, and maybe it's twice, three times, take a note of it. Go to Google Trends, see if it's going up. If it's going up, then the way to monetize it is, it sounds like it's exactly what you're saying through your method.
Totally. And there's no competition out there, because here's what happens today. Like, startup founder goes to a recruiter and says, I'm looking for this person. And the recruiter tells them, that's kind of a unicorn. And you're like, yeah, I know. I'm in the business of hiring unicorns. And the recruiter says like, okay, but that doesn't really work with my model, because my model is I do a bunch of work. And then if I happen to succeed, then you pay me commission. And so they're nervous to do a ton of upfront effort for a search that they don't have a ton of history of doing, they don't have the network for, will take a ton of calls to like sift through candidates, and then they may not even find the person. So this is like the opposite of that. It's like you tailor make people for these positions. And the reason why I think this is so impactful for the world is because it makes it easier to start companies and build like impactful businesses. And like that's the way a lot of things in the future will advance, is like through companies building new things. But the other reason is there are a lot of people out there who need to change their life and want to change their life, but they're just not going to become junior developers because their set of skills is different. Like the thing that they can contribute to the world is different. And so having multiple paths for someone to change their life and impact the world positively is a really, really great thing for everyone.
And if you were to start this, like how would you start this? How much money would it require? What tools would you use?
Yes. So you've heard like first, well, you are the champion of this. It's like first time founders like over focus on product, and second time founders know to focus on distribution. I think that product here is not the hard part. It's the distribution, because you both have to build trust in your quality, but also you need to find people at the right moment to sell this. And so I think the first thing you do is you just start by building your own distribution, your own platform. And you do the things that like you, Greg, have been doing, which is like start the podcast, start the newsletter, tweet every day, and like build trust as the person who gets what this role is.
Yeah, I think I want to give two examples of that, concrete examples. So there was an account, Julian Shapiro used to run something. He's an entrepreneur. He used to run something called Demand Curve and Bell Curve. They were, you know, growth businesses. And the one of the ways that he got a lot of traction is he created a Twitter account called Growth Tactics, at Growth Tactics.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. So good. So he got a really good name. You'd be surprised. Some of these names are still available. And just started sharing growth tactics. And then people would see it on their feed and they're like, do I want some more growth tactics in my feed? Yeah, absolutely. Click follow. So it started to grow pretty quickly. And all of a sudden he had, you know, a bunch, you know, thousands of people, startups, founders who are interested in growth tactics. And then he sold them courses and services and that sort of thing. So I think one good idea here is to just kind of grab like a generic sounding name and go and build a Twitter or LinkedIn account for that. That's one idea. That's what I would do.
I have a counterpoint to this.
Let's do it.
I believe that that would work, but I wonder if it still works well in like 2025. And the reason for that is I think people are moving away from trusting anonymous accounts to trusting people. And here's an example of that. We're hiring right now a role that I wish there was a K-pop factory for, because we're going to spend the next 10 months searching for this like unicorn person. And this is a designer to lead a growth team. It's just such a specialized role. And you need someone very, very senior who's super thoughtful, and like, it's a hard job to hire for. So there is a website called Growth Design that has a ton of these case studies, and the case studies are so awesome. It's a great website. I've spent hours on this website. Also, there is this woman, Kate Siuma. She was an early growth designer at Miro. She's since left and started a consultancy, but she's like started a podcast and newsletter, and she like writes on LinkedIn a lot. When I was looking for this person originally, I didn't reach out to the growth design team to find a hire. I reached out to her to see if she knows anyone. And so there's something about people that might be better at getting like just inbound interest.
So for people who don't know growth.design, they make these comic books and they break down. It's beautiful.
It's so great.
Go check it out. Yeah. They break down different UX flows and they basically kind of commentate it with user psychology and stuff like that, and it's absolutely brilliant. But I think that's another thing, is it's animated, so you don't really like feel connected to anyone. So yeah, I agree with you there. Makes sense. All right, what else you got?
Okay, here's another one. Before a startup is ready, actually, let me start with the title, which is like Bounty Program for Dev Evangelism. Before a startup is ready for their first dev evangelist hire, they need to write docs, they need to write starters, to like tutorials, they need to create like starter GitHub repos, videos. There's a ton of dev evangelism that needs to happen even before you have the capacity for a full-time hire. And it usually falls on the founder, who has a lot of other stuff they are doing. And at that moment would be very happy to pay someone to do like a 95% good job on the like basic stuff that they need to get started. You could imagine a bounty program where junior developers all over the world are like, oh, great, this startup needs a getting started tutorial. This startup needs how to use their tool with Zapier. And just one by one is able to contribute.
Who else is doing that?
Fiverr?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like it feels like there's no competition for that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the hard part about this is there's a, like, as a founder, honestly, I'd pay a lot for good quality work, but I wouldn't pay a lot for bad quality work that we'd have to redo, right? And so the benefit of a dedicated marketplace for this over a Fiverr is that the reviews can be tailor-made to the platform and they can just have a really high bar, the way that like Uber has a high bar for drivers or Airbnb for places.
Do you think this is a profitable cash flowing business, or do you see this potentially being like a VC backed thing?
I think this is a cash flow profitable business. And I think it gets even more profitable over time, just given the like decline of the cost of producing software. Like right now you may even need to like hire a developer to build the platform and all the features, but like pretty soon that's like, if you've seen like Vercel's like v0.dev, it will like design and build it for you. Like just fast forward a few years. And so then it's like, okay, you're one person, you can run this thing.
Can you just explain to people what v0 is and how that would extend to this?
It is pure magic. And what it is it's AI that builds the website for you. So you say what website you're looking for and it will generate it, the full thing.
It's crazy.
It's so awesome because it's such a preview of how the future will be. Like today, if you need some sort of service, you have like a whole company to create that service. Like how many engineers work at Yelp? But in the future, there will be some sort of public database of things. And then when you want the service, it can just be automatically generated for you in that time. And like, that's not 5 years out, but maybe it's 100 years out or 50 years out. I don't know. But like when I see V0, I'm like, oh, cool. The future is arriving soon.
This is firing me up. This is why you're on the pod right now, because I feel like you have such a good sense to where things are going. I want to keep the ideas going. What else you got?
Let millennials invest in VC funds. What you would do is you'd create a shadow LP that becomes an LP in all these funds and then allows the general public to be a part of, to be part of that LP. So like what it would broaden access to is like you as a 25-year-old could buy $100 of A16Z's, you know, fund, whatever. Whether or not the VCs will enjoy that, TBD. But do people want it? 100%.
Yes. Yeah, that was my first question to that is like, if you're A16Z, do you, you know, their whole, not them, I don't want to pick on them exactly, but the idea is like, there's like five funds that are really, really hard to get into and they curate their LPs really, really carefully. And they don't let regular people invest like you or me. And but the problem is I think that they want to keep it that way.
Yes, yeah. This is for the record an idea that won't work. And it won't like and there are more reasons than that it won't work. It's like also they love not having to share their fund like returns with the general public. And this would change that. Like it's like for all the reason this won't work. This is sort of an idea kind of like allow Harvard to accept more students. And it's like, that's not really what they do.
Yeah, but it's actually really interesting. So, and you know, when you come up with a bad idea, you know, on this podcast, we say, if an idea is good, you sip the idea. And if the idea is not good, you spit it. Sometimes these spit ideas actually get you down the line of thinking of a good idea. So for example, with this idea, your insight was right. Your insight is that millennials see, you know, use a lot of these software businesses, use a lot of these CPG businesses. They would rather invest in that than the S&P 500. Insight correct. But the execution of this is difficult because the other side of the marketplace, so to speak, doesn't really want that to happen. So the question is, what can you build for millennials such that they get that same feeling around, you know, that same warm and fuzzy feeling that they would have gotten?
Totally. At the time that we wrote this Notion doc, a company had just launched called Otis, which was the Skillshare founder launching a new financial startup. And it allowed, like, I guess it's targeted for young people, but allowed anyone to invest in like alternative assets like art and sneakers and just own a part of culture. And when I saw that, I was like, that's super inspiring. What else do millennials want to be a part of? And I was like, A16Z.
I know, there's something there and someone in the comment section is going to be like, here's where I should take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So feel free. So let us know in the comment section. I'm just going to keep saying, what else you got? What else you got? What else you got? What else you got?
at the time, so this one is, okay, the one more theme that I got very interested in at the time was these in-person events. And I think that now is the time to start in-person things, because we've all realized just how precious they are, but they're all really hard to start because the quality bar for what you'll attend a second time that's in-person is just super high. And so there is an amazing company called So Far Sounds. Are you familiar?
A little bit. I've never been to one of their events. So tell me more about it.
They are concerts in people's homes. But the thing that they just got right is they got the formula that you can trust, and you don't know what you're going to get until you show up. So you know it's going to be 60 minutes, three bands play, like 10 minutes each with like breaks in the middle. So you show up and then you know that they've curated the quality. So one idea in this doc is So Far Sounds for talks, where like, I love that format. It's such an easy and fun thing to go and do. It's novel each time, but sitting and listening to music for an hour, like, isn't everyone's jam. But what could be is sort of more like a variety show where you show up and there are going to be three talks. Maybe one is like a comedian, one is like a scientist, and that's the format. And that's the in-person event empire.
I think So Far was and is really onto something, which is that events haven't really changed in years. Like, they've basically stayed the same. So they were kind of like, okay, how do we, you know, with the trend around stadium shows and bigger shows and festivals, how do we do the complete opposite? And they did it, and I think they're doing quite well. I think they're doing like 8 figures in revenue or so. So they're doing really well. But I think that there's So Far Sounds for X is kind of the idea that you're saying, which is, you know, which I think the hard part with this is choosing like which community you want to go after and what is the utility for the event. So for example, So Far Sounds, a lot of people go to those events, at least in my like, and anecdotally, it's like they're going on a first date basically there. It's like, it's kind of perfect, right? It's like 60 minutes, you know, it's not you're just going to a bar or something like that. You're like doing something a little interactive. And then after you can talk about it and there'll probably be cool people there. So if you were doing, you know, so for your example, like talks, comedians, scientists, like those to me, like there's probably So Far Sounds for science, So Far Sounds for comedy, So Far Sounds for, you know, talks. What do you think about that?
I think it's more generalized. People want to be entertained. And so it's So Far Sounds for your entertainment. And you know that the quality bar is going to be good. I think that the hard part is not choosing a category. The hard part is the brand, where my co-founder says this like so eloquently, and I'm going to butcher this, but his philosophy, which I think is so right, is that moats are dead and brand is the only moat. It's like we used to all talk about network effects and like, you know, build something like Twitter. But if you think about all the software tools you use right now, there's not really a network effect. There's not really a network effect for Notion. Like maybe there's like we can come up with some, but why did you choose Notion? It's because the brand is just so strong. Like basically the strategy for startups right now is to be Coca-Cola. It's like, why do you drink Coca-Cola? Not because of any like lock-in or anything. It's because it's Coca-Cola. And so why do you show up to a So Far Sounds with a first date? It's because you know it's going to be a high quality hour of your life. And so I think the hard part is to establish that trust and to maintain it.
I stand corrected. Also, I love that line. That line is so good. I'm going to reuse that all the time. And you're right with Notion specifically, like we use Notion. We probably have like 70 or 80 people on Notion. And there is no network effects because I've thought about it too, because we're thinking about moving off of it. And now it's just, there were network effects with some of these businesses when it was really hard to get the graph on there. But like, you know, it's really easy to post a link on Slack and get my team to use something else, you know? So when people were saying network effects were everything, that was like in 2005, 2006, 2007. When that was a lot harder.
I agree. You know, Peter Thiel says like the best way to compete is to not compete. And I think that brand is the best way you can do that, where if you occupy enough mental space for a category, no one is searching for an alternative. When we started Jam, we didn't search for what's the best knowledge base. We just used Notion because their brand is so strong. I think that brand is the best mode out there this year.
100%.
The thing really to end on is to say that, like, there are things that I did not appreciate on day one of starting a startup about choosing your idea that I really wish that I had known on day one, or like we sort of lucked into, but I think are helpful for people who are on day one of choosing what to work on. The first thing is that if the startup goes to plan, like if all your dreams come true, this is probably like 10 to 20 years of your life, which is really a lot. Like when we started Jam when I was 26, this is probably going to be all my 30s. And so that's very exciting, but it's only exciting if you love what you do. And the thing that I didn't realize on day one is that it's A, has to be exciting enough that you're going to say no to a lot of other opportunities that come your way. But B, it is going to be like, you are going to think and talk about your company like all the time, because it's not just at work. It's you go see your family and your family's like, how's the business doing? And you go see your friends and they're like, how's the startup? And you like meet people at parties and they're like, what are you working on? And then like they have follow-up questions. So you're just you are in that space all the time. And so you better find the thing fascinating enough to talk about it for 10 years straight. The second is once the thing starts working, then you have this question of like, okay, well, great. Like now how do we like 1,000x this thing? And you kind of want to know on day one that there is a path to that. You don't have to know what the exact path is, but just having like, people call this like an idea maze, but just having like, here's what needs to happen to make this so worthwhile to spend a ton of time on is really helpful. And the last thing is that the type of business you start dictates how you will spend your time and who you will talk to and what you will wear and like, and what your life will be like. So we started a business targeting developers. I get to spend all day, every day talking to developers. It is awesome. I love it. But if we had started something where I have to wear a suit all the time, or I have to travel a ton, or like there are just a lot of different types of businesses to start, and you should choose one that fits your personality because it should be energizing in your day rather than very detracting.
There's only one thing I'll push back on in what you just said, which is the business will take up 10, 15 plus years of your life. For some businesses, that's absolutely true. But I think we're entering this new era of micro businesses. So, you know, 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago, when you wanted to create a business, it was like clowning Mount Everest in terms of like what you needed to get done. You know, back in the day when there was no internet and you wanted to, let's say, make a store, like you had to go and like find the location and spend so much money renovating it and painting and merchandising and getting the suppliers. You know, then 15, 20 years ago, you wanted to put an e-commerce store, you had to like build your own shopping cart. There was no Shopify. Now what's cool is you can stand on the shoulders of giants, and there is like a lower risk way of putting things out there. Now these businesses might not, you know, be as big as Jam. And you might need to create a portfolio of them to end up, you know, making it meaningful, but that's my take on the business needs to be 10 to 15 years.
Okay. You're right. It's true. But something that I underappreciated on the first day of Jam is I used to be a product manager, and I sort of thought all about product. And I was like, the hard part of building this is building the product. But building the product is like, now you can just even get started. And the rest of the journey is you're creating a movement that helps people improve their lives in a particular way. And just social change takes time, and behavior change takes time, and the environment changes around you. And so you're like, if it's not something where people are going to search for this tool and it's going to be the top search result in SEO always, and that, like, if the distribution doesn't come naturally, you're embarking on a very long journey and a lot longer than I sort of appreciated.
100%. Yeah, I feel you. I feel you on that, you know, and especially if you take venture, that's also like, you're definitely signing yourself up for the a chapter of your life. And where you know, I guess the difference is some businesses are chapters and some businesses are pages, and know the difference between a page and a chapter.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Before we head out, I need to tell you quickly the story of how I met Michelle Zaitlin, from the co-founder of Cloudflare, and her husband, Jamie, I think his name is.
I'm dying to know.
So I think, and he was also involved in Cloudflare, I think. Jamie was he? I don't know.
Not that I know of, but it's it,
yeah.
Maybe okay. Before my time.
So people know this, I'm Canadian. When I first came out to San Francisco, I didn't know anyone, but there was this Facebook group called AC781. And AC781 stood for Air Canada 781, the flight from Montreal to San Francisco. And for whatever reason, I was in this group and I was like coming to San Francisco and looking to sublet a place. I didn't know anyone. I was probably like 20 years old or something. And Michelle responded and she's like, hey, I've got this startup called Cloudflare. And like, we've got this space and it's a studio. And she rented it to me for like nothing, literally out of the goodness of her own heart. And, really got me like hooked onto San Francisco and changed my life from that little moment. And I think you never know who you're going to meet. You know, now, I mean, now Cloudflare is like a $20 billion company. You never know who you're going to meet. And it was just so cool how and positive and how she gave back. So I will say there's power in community and shoot your shot.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And like, what a like warm and like beautiful thing to do.
Yeah, totally. Danny, it's been a pleasure. People, please like and comment the YouTube video. If you're not watching this on YouTube, just get on YouTube and like it and comment on it. I hate that I say this now, but it actually gets the video spread and gets the pod spread. If you enjoyed this, if you got an ounce of value, I mean, she gave you a bunch of great ideas and a bunch of good framework for thinking about this. So thank you, Danny. Where could people find out more about you and Jam?
Well, first, I'll give you, for the first time, the full 141 idea notion to share. And if people are starting companies, our first pitch deck, if they're raising VC, is still online. It's at deck.jam.dev. So that's if anyone out there is starting something, if that's helpful to you. But I'm Danny at jam.dev. If you are using the product and you have feature requests or suggestions or just thoughts, reach out. I love chatting with our users.
This is amazing. So you just put up the deck and
yeah.
Anyone can
When we started the company, I used to be a VC. And I just thought, like, it's so unfair that I've gotten to see other founders pitch. And like, when you're starting a company, like the quality of your pitch deck matters. And so how can we just like, here's what ours is so other people who've never seen one can create their own.
Yeah, this is, I'm just going through the deck right now. Everyone should go check this out because this is so well done. This is like a good deck is just very clear around here's the problems, here's the solutions. And for anyone who's like doing any business idea, even if you're not raising venture, creating a deck like this will just help. It'll help you clarify what you're doing. So this is really good. Check it out. Thank you for sharing this. And yeah, we'll link the Notion and this in the YouTube description for people.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
Thanks, Danny. Later.